Blog Talk Radio.
And a runner at third, nobody out in the first and didn't score. Second and third, one out in the second and didn't score. Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. It's a home run, and the Cardinals have won the game by the score of 3-2 on a home run by the Wizard. Go crazy.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the UCB podcast. My name is Eugene Tierney, and I'm from Nerdcast.com. And with me, I have Doug.
Hey there. This is Doug. How's it going, Eugene?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm excited to hook up with you for this podcast. If you guys don't know me, I'm on the conclave at Galveston Baseball Geek, a.k.a. Doug V. So we're both a pair of conclavers.
Yeah, I haven't ridden there in a while, but I get on every once in a while and do something. So
yeah, I need to get going. I need to get going too. I tend to stall sometimes. Anyway, see, what did you want to talk about? Let's start with the Yadier Molina extension. What do you think about that?
I'm kind of torn on it. I'm glad he's going to be a lifelong Cardinal. I just wish it wasn't at the expense of Carson Kelly.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say I'm excited to see what Kelly can do now that the bat has finally caught up with the glove, and I just hate knowing that he's going to be sitting there watching Yadi play when we're going to see Yadi start declining a little bit.
Well, the thing I suggest somebody, and this probably won't ever happen, but I suggested that we should have Kelly and Harrison Bader prepare to play third base and see which of those two could succeed there, because we just signed Fowler. We've got Grichuk, who's young. Piscotty is young. So we've got outfield blocked and catcher blocked now. So we need to either trade them or come up with creative solutions for one of those two guys.
Yeah, and I know Kelly could handle third base because that's where the position he was drafted from. So that could be an option going forward. I guess
sure.
The only thing I'd be worried about, though, is it's been a few years since he's played that position.
Well, I mean, you know, we've got Peralta there for now, so it's not like he has to start there tomorrow. We can start prepping him to play during this season, you know?
Yeah, and that makes sense.
And plus, we also have Giorco, who could play third base as a backup, so yeah, I think that's something they should look into. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it's something I would consider if I were Mo.
Yeah, it's a definite option. What do you see Yadi doing over the next couple seasons?
Well, last year he hit 300, and he was inspired in the offseason by his performance in the WBC. He seemed really, you know, involved in that and active, you know, practically being a second manager on that thing. So it's great to see him come into the season with that and the contract, you know, to motivate him. Not that he needed any motivation, because he's kind of seems like a big self-motivator, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he looked really good in the World Baseball Classic, and I hope that carries over.
Yeah, well, I just hope that what he did last season carries over, that hit 300. You know, I was watching the first game because I had ESPN, so I was able to catch it. And, you know, I noticed how far back in the batter's back he steps. I don't know if he always did that, but, you know, I saw how he was able to generate contact through that, you know, and it provided hope for me that he could continue what he did last season, build on it, maybe hit 300 again. But even if he doesn't, he's such a good value defensively that that overrides anything. I always looked at his bat as a bonus.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a projection model that I've been using for a couple seasons, and I've been tweaking a little bit, and I actually tried to project out through 2020 what Yadi's going to do offensively. And the system shows this year he'll bat about 281, and then it gradually drops. And by 2020, I mean, it's at 272, which is still respectable for a catcher.
Yeah. Well, I want your projection system is to project his arm strength for the next three seasons. That's what I want your system to project.
I wish I could find a way to do that.
See how many base runners he throws out. And if it drops from 50 to 2, then we have a problem.
Yeah. That was another thing I looked at with the announcement of the extension. The stolen base opportunities against him. The reputation that he's had of gunning guys out, he was at, in 2014, there were 44 stolen base opportunities against him, and then jumped to 63 in 2015, and then 85 last season, which was the highest of his career.
Well,
so
you know,
I think word's getting out that his arm isn't where it used to be, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, well, he is 34 years old, and he has played a ton of games. You almost have to force him to sit at gunpoint, and so it's like you have to save him from himself, and that's why Kelly should get a few more games. But I can just see Yadi on the bench seething.
Yeah. So then there was another right after that with Stephen Piscotty. What did you think of the Piscotty extension?
I think that the Cardinals are smart in locking up these young guys before they reach, you know, arbitration and free agency and buy it out a couple of years, because it establishes, you know, a core for the team, and it also tells the other players that we got you. You play well, then we got you, you know?
Yeah. And really, I was kind of surprised that the dollar amount wasn't too terribly high.
I mean,
a million for this season, a million for next season, and then jumps up to about $7 million a season. That's not a lot for. That might be a lot for the first year or two of arbitration, but when you look at what he's been able to do so far and what he can possibly do, that's going to be a good value for the team.
Well, one of the things I like here is he didn't get too greedy, and because a lot of these young players, you know, sometimes their heads get big when they do well. Well, that didn't happen here. But the other thing is a lot of these guys signed these contracts for stability, and I think that's what happened here, because, sure, he might get a big contract down the road, but that's not a sure thing. What happens if he pulls a yes up quick and he slumps after last year's good year? Well, he's got guaranteed money in the bank, you know?
Yeah. Yep. We don't know if he's going to be Matt Carpenter or Alan Craig at this point.
Yeah. So if he slumps, it might be bad for the Cardinals, good for him. And, in fact, that might help him avoid a slump, because the pressure of a contract is off his shoulders now. He could just focus on play. So,
well, and even if he doesn't turn out like they're hoping, it's only $7 million a year. I mean, we got a lot of guys that play worse than he does for more money than that. So, I mean, look at what the Cubs are paying Jason Hayward.
Yeah, but, you know, I have a hard time. I realize that inflation in baseball, but the words only and million don't quite, no matter how much the million is, words only and million don't sit well with me.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. The prices have gotten, the salaries have gotten way out of hand.
Yeah. You know, speaking of extensions, remember when they extended Carlos? When did they extend Carlos Martinez?
I think that was last spring training.
So that makes – we've extended Carlos, we've extended Colton, we've extended You know, Piscotty says three young players we've already extended. I mean, that's a good sign. I mean, you know, next step might be, if he doesn't have one already, I don't keep track of everybody, but Grichuk.
They said he's probably the next in line to talk to him. Mm-hmm. I would have to imagine it's him or maybe Michael Wacha if he proves he can make it through a majority of the season.
Yeah. You know, and if I were Wacha, I would obviously wait because he struggled last season, so his value would be down. So I would wait and see if I would rebound this season to make the contract a little better for me if I were him.
Yeah.
But,
if they didn't want to go young player route, they could look at possibly Lance Lynn or Sungwan Oh and see about extending those two, because I think they bring a lot of value to the team, even if they're not going to be buying out arbitration years.
Well, Oh is not young.
No, I agree. But there's a real opening at closer after he leaves the team.
Yeah. Well, you know, yes, no. I mean, we've got some young arms in the system. It's just a matter of seeing who fits where. But, yeah,
right.
You know, I think he can hold down the role for this year and next year, and then beyond that, I don't know, because closers are volatile, although he closed a lot in Korea. So, but, he, like I said, he is getting up there in age a little bit. He doesn't rely on the heat, though, so we'll have to see how that goes. So what do you think of the first three games of the season?
I thought we looked pretty good outside of relief pitching. I mean, the starting pitching looked really good, even with Wainwright being a little up and down. I mean, he only gave up two runs and worked on some jams, which is promising.
I think Wainwright is going to be better this year than he was last year. I mean, he just had a bad year. I don't know if necessarily he's going to pull a Verlander and go from bad year to second in the Cy Young voting, but I think he's going to have a solid season.
Yeah, I agree with the issues with the pushing off from and the issues with the curveball grip. I think he's going to bounce back nicely. I don't think he's an ace anymore, but he's a bulldog that knows how to adjust to the hitters.
Well, the thing here, as you mentioned, the ace, I think it creates, again, when you talk about pressure, well, less pressure on him without him, you know, being slotted as the number one starter, you know, a little less pressure. The pressure shifts to Carlos, who, by the way, I think can handle it, but we can get into a little bit more to that later. And less pressure on him, so he can just go out there and perform like the veteran he is.
Yeah. I didn't get a watch yesterday, but I know Lance Lynn sounded like he was pitching very well. I mean, he didn't go super deep into the game, but it's his first start back from Tommy John surgery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you got to play it safe with him. I mean, that's another guy who kind of had that little seething mentality when he was sitting on the bench. He kind of liked to go long, you know. He liked to stay in games and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how he adjusts, having much of a stricter, you know, watch on him as far as, you know, innings pitched, number of pitches thrown, because he likes to be out there.
Yeah, he threw 98 pitches yesterday, I think is what the total was. So, yeah, they're going to – I think we won't see him go over 100 very much, at least the first month of this season.
Yeah, that's a smart move. You got to – you know, he was a workhorse, and if you can get him back to being that, that would be a great thing. But the other thing to watch is before the surgery, I don't know if he's added any pitches, but he was pretty much a fastball-only pitcher. He pumped those fastballs in there like 80, 90% of the time. So you have to wonder if that created part of the issue. So he may need to cut down on that fastball usage.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull him up real quick to see what he threw yesterday. While I'm finding that, Carlos Martinez, he looked incredible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is, you know, and this might be a thing to watch for other pitchers in the rotation, is Carlos Martinez. You know, he had two primary pitches, the fastball and the changeup, and he set up that changeup beautifully. I was watching that game, you know, just the fact that he could reach back and toss 100 up in the zone and get him flailing meant the hitters had to watch for that 100-mile-an-hour heater. And so when that changeup came floating in there, they were just helpless.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other pitchers, I don't know what Lance Lynn's other repertoire is other than fastballs, but they may want to talk to Carlos, you know, even though he's young, he's already established himself as a bit of a leader, you know, and talk to him about that changeup he's got, about that changeup grip and whatnot, and see if they can use that to their own advantage.
Yeah. So Lance Lynn threw primarily four-seam fastballs. He threw a few sinkers, a few cutters, and then, like, one curve and a couple changeups. So, yeah, it was primarily the four-seam fastball.
Yeah, see, and, you know, the cutters and the sinkers, they're both fastballs, too. So he needs to, I think, focus on more off-speed stuff. I mean, you know, if the curve isn't, you know, Adam Wainwright level, then it's a change of pace. But I would look into maybe developing that change up a little better. You know, maybe you can drop those three fastballs total into 75-80% of your repertoire and then change up 20-25%, at least enough to keep hitters honest.
Yeah.
So, and then eventually you can add a third pitch, a third breaking, you know, a second breaking pitch, I should say, you know, develop that curve a little better, or even a slider. A slider is 5-10 miles an hour off the fastball, just enough of a difference to, you know, confuse hitters. So you need, I think breaking pitches and off-speed stuff is just to me as important as a good fastball.
Yeah, I just think at this point it's going to be hard for Lynn to really develop something to use to go with that fastball between coming off the surgery and just his years of relying on it. I think it's going to be tough. But we've seen pitchers add stuff in the past.
Well, I remember when Shelby Miller was here, and when he had his last good year, he learned a grip from Jake Westbrook, I believe. It was like a sinker or something, and it improved his performance here. So it's just a matter of talking to your teammates, seeing what they got, you know, working to improve yourself.
Yeah. So for Carlos, in his start, he threw primarily the sinker with the four-seam, but he also threw 22% of his pitches for sliders, 20% for changeup, and 3% for his curve.
Mm-hmm.
He mixed it up a lot more than we saw on a Lance Lynn.
But see, you know, on the other hand, Lynn could survive as a fastball pitcher. You know, he, like I said, he threw three different fastballs. Well, provided they play safe and, you know, gradually working back, he could easily survive that way, because if you look at one of my favorite players in baseball, Bartolo Colon, he throws nothing but fastballs. I mean, he adjusts his grip so he makes it do one thing, makes it do another, but the guy throws nothing but fastballs, and he's doing pretty good.
Yeah, and it's not like high-heat fastballs either. He's throwing soft fastballs these days.
Yeah, but it's because he adjusts his grip so much. He makes the pitches move a lot. So it's not like he's throwing a flat 89-mile-an-hour fastball. They're going to feast on that sucker, but he really makes them dance. So it's about the movement there. And speaking of pitchers who need to make their pitches move a little, coming into last season, Mike Leake was known as basically a guy that gets a lot of ground ball outs. But last year, I forget the percentage, but I think it was down a little bit, although our defense may have affected him if he did have a decent amount. But he needs to, you know, if not maintain what he had 2 years ago, or if not improve on what he had last year, at least maintain what he had on 2 years ago as far as ground ball percentage, because, that's what he does, and that's what we paid him for, which I don't really want to go into Mike Leake's contract because that was massive overpay, and I could talk about 5 hours on that sucker.
Bet the defense turns it around for him this year, because that's going to pretty much make or break him.
One note to Mo, if you don't get your primary target, don't overpay on your secondary target.
Yeah, and they really missed on that so far, but hopefully he can bounce back.
Yeah,
but otherwise, I love Mo.
So, I mean, I'm a big fan. It's just sometimes when he goes for those secondary targets, he overpays.
Yeah. So the hitters for the first series, what were your thoughts on what we saw?
Well, like I said, I liked what I saw out of Molina. The thing that I really liked was seeing Grichuk step up in that first game. He struggled a little bit last year, and so it's nice to see him not only whack that 3-1 home run, or whack that however many home run runners are on it was, but also, I forget if it was a solo shot or a two-run shot or whatever, but also with that game-winning single. It's nice to see him get off to a good start. I'm not sure what he did in games 2 and 3, but it was nice to see what he did on opening day.
He's a player I have questions on still. He's a great defensive player, but I'm worried that there's too many holes in his swing, and when guys just throw him off-speed stuff is when he really struggles. So hopefully he can get that fixed this year and be an everyday player.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. You're trading, basically, Grichuk for Halliday. Halliday was a defensive rock out there. He couldn't move, you know. I don't know his defensive efficiency and, you know, value, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't very good. So
yeah, he was a subpar fielder.
I said he was
definitely a subpar fielder.
So if your total war at the end of the season, including defensive war, which I don't think everybody factors in, you might see that Grichuk, at the very least, will equal what Halliday provided based on maybe a lesser bat but a much better glove.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree
so,
with that.
So, I mean, run prevention is a key here. I mean, say that, you know, Grichuk hits 230, 240 with 15 home runs and 80 RBIs. Not the production you're expecting. But if his glove is very, very good, you might end up with the same WAR that Halliday provided because of run prevention. So you have to look behind the scenes a little bit on that.
Yeah. Dexter Fowler looked good in his debut. I don't have the numbers in front of me of what he ended up doing, but I mean, his presence is already being felt with the team, which is a good thing. They seem a lot more loose than they did coming out of spring training last year.
Well, yes and no. I have one concern, and his name is Colton Wong. He griped a little bit about the platoon thing, and of course he retracted that statement and all that jazz, but the initial thing is still out there, and people are wondering what's going on there because, Giorgio did do a good job last year providing some offense, and it makes sense to, you know, get him in there. But on the other hand, Wong has already signed an extension, and, you know, you're not paying that much money for a part-time player.
Yeah. I'm torn on Wong. The talent is there. It's just he's got to put it all together, and he's running out of time to do it. He is a platoon player at this point until he proves otherwise.
But again, defensive value. He provides a lot of defensive value. And at the very least, if I were Matheny, and I don't know if you follow my tweets or my blogs or whatever when I'm active, I'm not a big fan of Matheny's. But if I were Matheny, I would, at the very least, use him every game as a defensive replacement if he's on the bench.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The problem is, though, if you're going to have a guy like Grichuk who has questions with the bat and Wong in the same lineup, that's two holes, plus the pitcher spot. So you have to rely on six guys to carry the offense, which might put a little stress at the top of the order.
Well, like I said, defensive placement, you're only getting two or three innings at the end of the game. So that minimizes the bat a little bit.
Yeah.
So, basically, if you got a lead, stick him in there and help him, use him to help preserve the lead.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And he had one of the last at-bats yesterday, and he battled and ended up on base. So, it was a good at-bat. I didn't get to see it. I was listening to it in the car. But if mm-hmm. he can keep doing stuff like that, it's going to definitely help his value and build his confidence.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of our time here, but one question I have for you is Alydmus Díaz at shortstop, what do you think he's going to do defensively? We know his bat is there, or at least it was last year. Hopefully he doesn't slump, but what do you think he's going to do at shortstop defensively? Do you think he's going to improve over what he did last year? Because he wasn't exactly, a good defensive shortstop last year.
And his defense has been the knock on him ever since they signed him. And they didn't know if he was going to be more of a utility player or shift to second or third, which I think is probably his long-term position. I think he'll be serviceable. He will hit the stuff he will get to the balls that are hit right to him, but I don't see him being the guy that makes the Colton Wong type play. I think he's more of a Johnny Peralta type. To him, he'll get it, he'll make the throw. But if he has to move for it, that's when you're going to start seeing more issues.
Well, but see, here's the thing. We already talked about possibly putting Kelly at third base. We signed Wong to that extension. We got Carpenter at first base. He's pretty much stuck at shortstop for now.
Yeah. Well, we just got the alert that we're out of time for today.
All right. But
we
enjoyed
can continue
my time.
Discussion next time.
Yeah, I've enjoyed this discussion, and I look forward to working with you in the future because I think we have a nice, sync up here. It seems like we're playing well off each other. So it was a nice talking to you, and I look forward to talking to you next time.
All right, yeah, we'll do it again. All right.
All right, but I'll just say bye, everybody.
All right, we'll talk to you in the future.
Bye.